Okay, but we don't have
I can hear you, I can't hear anybody else.
Yeah, I think what we've
okay,
lost.
We're back now.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that. So we're just, Martin was playing with some buttons to set the machine so it now is recording your conference, so I didn't get recorded.
Yeah.
We didn't realize that you got cut off in the process and couldn't hear instructions that we had to listen to.
I didn't expect there would be a speech coming from the phone there.
So sorry about that.
Okay, I just want to give a very quick sort of review of what's been happening in this file. So we all sort of get a reminder. This project was first referred to an environmental assessment by the Mackenzie Valley Land and Water Board in May of 2005, and at that time the review board issued a work plan that really only consisted of a hearing and then either a decision or further steps depending on how much information board would get at the hearing. There were quite a few written submissions at that time, and they were mostly about what the issues were with the project. We got to the same stage we are now, that is a pre-hearing conference, and then I guess after that the developer decided that they weren't quite ready yet to prepare to go through a hearing and then the DEA process, and they withdrew the application and reapplied again this fall, and once again the Mackenzie Valley and the Water Board showed it to an environmental assessment, and this was done in early September. This time the work plan, as you probably know, is a bit more involved. We have had, you know, learned a few things since then, and we've had other developments in, not nearby, but in the general vicinity, and therefore this time the work plan had a round of information requests, which technically closes today, but it's probably going to be, you know, tomorrow or the day after, so that we finally get all the stuff in. And we will be having a hearing, and then after the hearing, a period of time, a couple of weeks, where parties can submit additional information to things that come up at the hearing. That's something that we have learned over the years. It's just something always comes up at the hearing, and you need a little bit more time or response to something. So that's, in a nutshell, the process and what has happened so far. We've had the information request issued, and we have the hearing scheduled for January 16th in Luther K. And it's at this point scheduled to be a one-day hearing, and so we're kind of hoping to get it all done in one day. The details are still a bit sketchy in terms of logistics, but we can tell you that the hearing will be starting at 10 o'clock, and it will be running hopefully until we're done. So it's probably not going to be done at 4 o'clock. It could be run into the evening, or it's quite likely, I would think, to run a little bit into the evening, depending on how much interest there is. The purpose of a hearing is really for the board to hear evidence directly from the parties. That's the chance where the board gets to hear it without, you know, going through either written material or through staff. And it's a chance for the parties to directly address the board. Now, Mary already mentioned that ideally the hearing deals with the last few remaining issues, and everything else has been dealt with before. I realize, of course, that since this process is slightly different than what we normally do, so we have, like, you know, several rounds of IRs and technical sessions and whatnot, that you don't expect to have too many, you know, issues simply be taken off the table. But I think what's important for the parties to realize is that this is your chance to tell and explain to the board why you think this development is likely or not likely to be a cause of significant adverse impacts on the environment. And so I guess what I want to stress here is the significant part. I mean, there is obviously all kind of a long list of things that can always be mentioned, but this is your chance to convince the board that this is going to be significant. And so, ideally, I mean, you are free to say whatever you want to the board, as long as it's polite. But from our point of view, what we're really looking for is sort of the clinches, the showstoppers, what is the really important stuff here. And like, hard evidence. Not necessarily just, you know, think there might be an issue, more in the sense of we have, you know, something to show this is why we think it is an issue.
This is not about scoping the development. This is now about actually making the decision by the board whether it is going to be likely or not likely to have significant impact. I sent around this graphic. Yeah, it's the last email. And if you don't have any, I got a few here.
On the phone, did they get a copy?
Yeah, you should have gotten a copy on email.
Martin,
yeah, got a copy.
And this is just, I took the developer's application there and the Golder report and just took some timelines together. And just as one way of, as one example, a very simple example, and it's probably not 100% accurate, and it's not sort of like what the final decision is going to be based on. But this is one way of fairly quickly showing to the board, hey, this is, you know, what we mean here with the timing. And I think this is the board members are irregular people, so they, you know, they like myself, I guess they like visual things. In terms of the hearing mechanics, this is a community hearing according to our rules of procedure. So in practice, what it means is going to be a mix of formal presentations and open mic. And formal presentations should be registered in advance. So ideally, of course, I would like to know today for people if you want to do a presentation and roughly how long you think it's going to be. But there is also a chance for others and yourself, if you're not sure yet, to sort of let us say a week in advance also know at least that you are planning to have a presentation. But the earlier we know, the easier for us it is to plan, and if there's, you know, 50 presentations, I don't hope there will be, but if that were the case, then we might need to sort of our logistics.
Have joined the conference.
Who just joined our conference?
This is Cheryl from North
Slade Macy. Hi, Cheryl. This is Castle speaking, Cheryl. I'm just going to, for the benefit of you, and I'll make this very brief, I'll let you know where we're at. We have a number of representatives from our energy, from Indian and Northern Affairs, from the Beverly Kemeneriak Caribou Board, from Environment Canada and Golder Association, as well as on the phone we have Ray Griffiths with World Wildlife Fund, Oren Jury representing the HTO in Baker Lake, and we have Monica Kruger and Stephen Ellis in Litzel Cay. What we're doing right now, Cheryl, is just giving an overview of what we're doing, what the pre-hearing's all about, and we haven't gotten too far along in the details, so I'm sure you can catch up.
Okay, that's good. And I have to let you know, I have another telephone conference going on at the same time, and I'm going to switch back and forth. I'm going to keep both phones going. But then I'm going to try and catch the agenda that are important in different meetings. And I apologize if I bother you, but just continue as you would, as if I wasn't bothering you.
All right, Cheryl. And Cheryl Grieve is with the North Bay Meeting Association. Okay, sorry for that interruption. Martin, carry on.
Okay, so I just... That's very difficult to explain what the purpose of the hearing is. As I said, what the board's looking for is obviously is hard evidence, and I should also mention to the board that PK obviously is hard evidence. So. In terms of the hearing mechanics, I already mentioned it's a community hearing, mix of formal presentation and kind of open mic. We will have translation services, so there will be translators, simultaneous translation. There will be transcripts, so whatever is will eventually be able to be read and will be on the public registry. And there also will be food. As I said, it's planned as a one-day hearing starting at 10 a.m. and running until sometime in the early evening, hopefully only. And the board at this point is basically chartering in and out. And the board has commitments the next day.
So if we need more time, then we have a bit of a problem, and we'll see how we go around that. So, as I already mentioned kind of earlier, so to everybody, to sort of really focus on the most important things. And when I say everybody, obviously there are some parties that have issues, and there are other parties that don't. It's pretty obvious that parties that do have an issue with development will, you know, try to make a case and say, okay, well, this is why we think it has a significant impact. But we do encourage the other parties that do not have an issue with this to come out and say, this is why we don't have an issue, or this is why we don't think this is going to be have a significant adverse impact. So before this, it's important to make a decision based on the evidence. And if it has a lot of evidence, you know, one way, but none presented the other way, then it's kind of difficult for the board to make a decision. And the board will be briefed prior to the hearing on what's already on the record. So, again, you do not necessarily need to present absolutely everything. You can really sort of stress the main thing that are most important to your organization. The board will get a presentation by staff on a summary of everything that is on the record, and they will have access to everything that is on the record for them to read. That pretty much, I think, is how the hearing is going to go. Just want to talk very briefly about the scope of the assessment again, so make sure that we're sort of on the same page on that. And in recent assessments, the board has gone through quite some, you know, process of scoping. Those who participated in the Gacha Way assessment, for instance, will know that we've had, you know, quite a number of workshops. The board did not do this in this project for a number of reasons. One is that we've already had a pathways assessment, and we've had a lot of written submissions that we felt that gave us enough information to figure out what the issues are here. And we defined that in the work plan, and the work plan has this table in explaining what the issues are and which of those issues are actually within the scope, and some of the issues that have been raised are not within the scope. The board's facing a bit of a dilemma here, I think, in that the fact that it's dealing with uranium, and one of the issues is the creation of protected areas and really land use planning decisions on whether there should be development in the area or not. Those are fundamental issues, and they're very important to some parties. But at the end of the day, the environmental assessment can only address certain things, and that's are things that have to do with impact of this particular development. So as much as these other bigger questions are important questions, and at some point need to be addressed, it's very difficult for the board, and the board cannot deal with Canada's approach to nuclear power. It's just not going to happen. So it's a bit of a dilemma, because in some ways board members might feel strongly about, you know, protecting the caribou and protecting areas, yet at the same time they have to be very careful, and they're very conscious of what is it in the end that our report will have some measures in it, and what can it do. And so the what I'm trying to say really is those parties that have issues in that respect, and who may, you know, may feel a little bit rejected by the board by having not included these issues in the scope, of having had some information requests rejected, it's not because we don't think those things are important, but those are things that the board simply feels it cannot address, and the board rather would focus on the things it can address and do a good job on those things, rather than, you know, looking at a lot of things that it can't actually deal with, and then in the end, sort of, in the process, end up doing a poor job on all the issues. Now, whatever I've said now, the rule is, you can present to the board whatever you want to present to the board. I mean, that's just the basic thing here. But as I said, the board can only deal with certain things. And if you can focus on those things, that's great, because that makes the board's job easier.
more likely that you get at least those issues or things dealt with. I'm not sure if we need to do that, but if people want, I can go over that table that we have in the work plan, but I would think that everybody is probably more or less aware of that. One issue that's been coming up a lot, and a lot lately, is the question of consultation, and particularly, like, we call it the Big C consultation. And I think there's been a lot of, quite a number of letters going back and forth, and some of the people around here are probably aware of all of the stuff that's been going on. I think there may have been some misinterpretation of what we said in terms of, you know, the group of not doing consultation or not being responsible for doing consultation. It's the board's position that in terms of the Section 35 of the Constitution Act and fiduciary responsibilities of government and all that kind of stuff, what we call Big C consultation, our process can contribute to that, but it's ultimately the responsibility of the government. And we cannot, you know, say, okay, this is what we do, and this is what the consultation is going to be, because the government ultimately is responsible for doing it, making sure that it has been done. Now, the government may at the end say, well, the process that the board has been using was adequate, or it may say the process was not adequate, and maybe one day they'll tell us maybe we should change our process. At this point, we do what we need to do under the act that we're operating, Mackenzie Valley Resource Management Act. It's an open process, and as I said, everybody can say whatever they want, but the assessment can only address in
Rosie Bjornson, Denny Nicolet IMA.
Has joined the conference.
Rosie.
Rosie, hi, this is Mary Tapsa with Enverb here.
Hi, Mary, I'm sorry I'm late, guys.
Okay. Rosie, I'm going to just let Martin Heffler right now, the lead environmental assessment officer, is just reviewing a little bit on the process of the hearing, and I will go around the table when he's finished and just let you know briefly who's here. But Danny Newclay, we welcome you, Rosie, and hopefully you can catch up with the discussion. We haven't gotten into identification of any issues from parties yet, but we are sort of laying out the ground rules of what will be happening or expected in the hearing, okay?
Sure.
Martin, is that your name?
Yes.
We also have Gary Bailey and Kenneth DeLorme here from Fort Resolution Métis Council. We've been here for a while. I thought you guys knew that.
I'm sorry, could you repeat your name?
Gary Bailey and Kenneth DeLorme from Fort Resolution Métis Council.
Oh, thank you. We didn't hear you come in.
No, I figured that. But we were here for a while.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I was in the middle of clarifying or maybe adding to the confusion about the consultation. So what I'm trying to say here is the environmental assessment addresses environmental issues, environmental impacts. All these other issues cannot be addressed through EA measures. In the absence of a, you know, overall consultation process agreed on and whatnot, the board is going to focus on these things and in a sense is not interested in all these other things.
Can I stop you for a minute?
Sure.
Do you guys have all the participants in the conference call on the line right now?
Yeah, what we'll do, Gary, is we'll... I'm just going to let Martin finish this one piece, and then I'm going to do another round of introductions, okay?
I'm just asking that because you guys gave us the wrong number to participate in it. You guys gave us 440784, and it's 440284.
Yeah, we realize that,
yeah.
And we apologize. Most people like yourself figured it out, and that was Martin's fault.
No. Yes, it was my fault.
I'm saying that. Anyways, we do apologize, and yes, we realize we got the number wrong.
We have everybody who has indicated to me that they want to participate on the line at this point.
Right on.
Thank you, though.
Okay, well, that's pretty much what I wanted to say. So I just want to clarify that it's not the board's position that they don't want to do any kind of consultation. The board is aware that its process contributes and can make an important contribution, but the ultimate responsibility is not with the board. I thought I needed to clarify that.
Just a minute, Steve. Steve, you have a comment?
Yeah, I guess just, thanks, Martin. I think that clarification was useful for me. I guess the, you know, and I think it's become clear over the past couple months that the MVRB will fulfill its obligation to implement the MVRMA with regard to this process. But as Martin ably laid out, there's some issues that sort of fall out of that process, which is the Big C consultation, as you call it, as well as land use planning and conservation planning in the Acacia region, as well as claims. Issues are going on sort of in parallel with this EA process. And unlike the Satu and Gwich'in and areas where the MVRMA is the sum total of what needs to be accomplished to permit something, that does not ring true in the Acacia region, where rights have not been extinguished and big consultation must occur. So if the MVRMA is not going to take care of Big C consultation, who is? And I'm glad INAC's on the line, because I'd like to hear an answer to that. How are they going to do it? And is the MVRB going to just proceed sort of in its own little parallel universe, make its ruling, provide its report to the minister, without keeping an eye out on what's going on in these parallel processes? I guess that's my concern. That I think that the review board needs to engage in a dialogue with those people who are responsible for implementing the obligation to consult, Big C consult, with the Acacia people.
Okay, Steve, Lorraine Steele's here, and I'm not expecting Lorraine to give you a complete huge answer. This is a big issue, but I am glad you're raising it. And it's something that maybe we can try to get this addressed, or at least some kind of answers for you prior to our hearing. I'm just going to let Lorraine speak to your information. Other parties, Lorraine's with Department of Indian Affairs.
Yeah. On the question of dialogue, Diane has been in a dialogue with the Review Board and with the Land and Water Board for several months now on how to make their processes work together with the consultation obligations. So, and we've also had some discussions with some of the Acacia organizations. So there is dialogue happening outside the context of any particular environmental assessment or permitting process. It's a complex question, as everybody knows. And we recognize that there are issues other. So I think what Martin said is pretty much how we have to deal with what's on the table in terms of this project. And so Diane and the other government departments will be looking, or we're participating in the process and tracking all the concerns raised and what happens. And if there is a desire for, and I know, Steve, you've raised this question directly with Diane, and we have a commitment to continue our discussions with you on it. And we can provide that some kind of statement to the EA process for this project, if that that would be helpful to people.
Yeah. Okay, that would be helpful. And I mean, this is something I'm sure that you know will be coming up in dialogue in hearing. Even though it's something that we can't directly address, so I'm hoping that INAC will be able to provide some answers or have more dialogue with Lusoke or the Acacia prior to the hearing. Any other, before I go and reintroduce everybody, because I think we have a few new participants on the poll, so I'm sorry, I'm going to do one more around the table.
Well, the Fortress Meiji awaits that consultation as well, along with the Acacia. We haven't received any of that either. say you got a dialogue happening already, but I don't believe that covers the big C, the consultation. This is accommodation.
Yeah, okay, well, again, thanks for bringing that up, Gary, and your concerns are noted. But again, you have to recognize what our board can and cannot deal with, and we have to deal with impacts of the development on the environment as defined in the legislation. So things like Section 35 consultation, though I know it's an issue and a concern, and they can be brought up, and it's not something that we can directly deal with in our environmental assessment. Just to put that on the table and clarify with people, we do have, the board has consultation requirements that are very clearly spelled out in the legislation of the Mackenzie Valley Resource Management Act. Now, I know that in the process of how we consult, and we do consult on projects, that INAC can run a parallel track looking at our process to see if it is indeed meeting their crown requirements. So, but that's really up to them to talk about how they meet their Section 35 requirements, not our board.
Okay. Yeah, Mayor, Steve Ellis here. And I think it's great that INAC's parallel process is going to be keeping an eye out on the EA process to define issues and look at where Big C consultation might have to occur, so on and so forth. But my question is the MVRB going to be keeping an eye on what's going on with the parallel INAC process? And the concern here is that if MVRB is going to make a recommendation to the minister without ensuring that the Big C consultation issues have been taken care of by INAC.
But really, it is a recommendation, Steve, that we make, and INAC, who has that responsibility, is INAC and the other responsible ministers that also have responsibilities as far as Crown requirements, they are the ones that make that final decision. So we put a recommendation forward. When they make that decision, they are also taking into consideration consultation. And again, an environmental assessment is not an issuance of a permit or a right. It is then moving it to the next stage. It is actually at the issuance of a permit or a license in which you could actually potentially then have some infringement. So I'm not going to get into a huge thing on consultation here, but I understand and I hear your concerns, and so do the members of INAC here, and I'm hoping that they can have more dialogue again prior to the hearing to help sort this type of stuff out, because we're in our process, and what INAC does and how they deal with the Section 35, they really need to respond to you on that.
I think the only thing I would add to that, this is a bit of a chicken and egg kind of question, is are we going to finish the assessment before the parallel process is done, or can the parallel process actually be done until we finished our EA report? So it's a difficult thing, and I think what's required here is really for all those involved at some point to get together and come up with some sort of an overall process here on that and what the EA concept is. And I think the Danny Nuclear First Nation has and 38 in the recent letters kind of got the ball rolling on that, and we'll need to see what's going on. In terms of this assessment of this specific development on uranium exploration at Screech Lake, I think we need to now focus on the actual assessment and assessing the impacts of that development. And I don't think we can necessarily saddle that assessment with the big overall question. It would be nice if that overall process could be defined and handled and put in place before we end this, but that remains to be seen. I would now actually like to move on and get down to the nuts and bolts here and on the hearing. And I guess the first one on that would be, and I think we can combine that with the next round of introductions,
okay.
Is to find out which parties are actually planning on making a presentation at the hearing. And if they already have an idea of roughly how long their presentation might be, that would be even better. So we can go around the phones and then the table and have everybody say if they are sure they're going to make a presentation, or if they think they're going to make a presentation, or if they're sure they don't make a presentation.
Okay, maybe we'll start with World Wildlife, Ray Griffith, who's joining us from Toronto. Ray, does World Wildlife plan on making a presentation at the hearing?
Yes, we will be.
And do you have sort of an approximation of time you might be requiring?
I expect that it would be roughly 20 minutes, and that should include some question time. It could be a little bit longer if the questions continue, but 20 minutes should be adequate.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Monica Kruger with the Lithuania, and then Stephen, you're with the IMA office. So are you planning, either of you, jointly or separately, to make a presentation?
Monica, we will be making a presentation.
Okay. Monica, do you have any indication of time you might require?
I would. And I know they're not on the call this morning. They're. May also be a presentation from Tom Foss, Great Canadian Wilderness Holdings, and I believe he is registered as an intervener. He may not be present in person, but putting a PowerPoint presentation together to be presented at the hearing.
I'm not sure.
We'll have to check and see if they are.
Even if not, it is a community hearing, so everybody is. Can do a presentation, I guess. If
Monica,
you want to.
You cut off on the time you were requiring for your presentation.
I'm estimating an hour, and Martin, I believe I had emailed you about that before. That Tom and you had confirmed that Tom is a registered intervener.
Possible. I also got a phone call from Alex Hall, who's planning on being there and making a short presentation.
Okay.
But I think they're different. Organizations, right?
Yes.
Good.
All right.
Okay, 1 hour you said then. Okay.
Steve Ellis, are you planning on anything from the IMA office?
20 minutes.
20?
40?
20
minutes.
20, okay.
4 hours!
Okay. Cheryl Grimm, are you with us right now?
Yes, I am.
Are you planning on attending the hearing or making a presentation?
Both. And the presentation would probably be half an hour, roughly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Rosie from Deninukwe, are you planning on attending and making a presentation?
Yes, we are, Mary. We're going to probably. A rough estimate, I'd say an hour, because I'm going to make my presentation, and then I'm going to have possibly the chief, and then an elder and a youth.
Okay. And Gary from the Fort Resolution Métis Council, are you planning on making a presentation?
I'm just actually an alternate right now. Arthur's going to be stepping into that meeting. Arthur's gone out on the road today, so I couldn't tell you that, to tell you the truth.
Arthur Beck?
Yes.
So you're not sure whether
can you contact me over the next few days, and well, as soon as you know, it'd be great.
Martin, I believe that NWT Métis Nations are interviewing.
Right.
They do have interviews.
They are interviewers, yes.
Okay.
Or a Tommy. We don't call them
interviewers anymore. And we do have Oren Jury has joined us from Baker Lake, and I know Oren is working with the HTO over there. Currently, Oren, the HTO is not a registered party in our environmental assessment. Perhaps you could explain to us how you wish to participate in this process since you've just joined into it?
So we can give a 10-minute PowerPoint and 5 minutes question period, or 15 minutes total.
Okay. And we'll talk to you further about whether you should officially register as a party, or you can also present as a public.
Yep, that's right.
All right. I think that covers everybody on the phone right now. Is there anyone that's here? Okay, we're just going to move over to the table here. I'm going to start off with the developer, UR Energy. We have Eric and Tal here, and we have also Golder Associates that are working with the developer. Now, normally in a lot of our hearings, we start off with a presentation from the developer about their proposed development. So perhaps you could give us an indication of, you know, what you would like to do or time you might require.
We'd give a short presentation on an order of 20 minutes to half an hour.
Okay. Thank you. Moving around the table, INAC, are you planning on...
We'll definitely be attending. just nailing down which people. At this point, we're not planning to make a formal presentation, and we'll be available for questions.
Okay. Lastly, with the Beverly Caminariac.
We're giving a two-part presentation in which the first part will be in collaboration with the GMWD, specifically on charity issues in terms of use of the area, etc. So the idea...
I cannot hear Leslie.
Okay. Sorry.
The BQCMB will be giving a two-part presentation, and the first part will be in collaboration with the GNWT Wildlife Division in terms of actual caribou use of the area and specific caribou information. And the second part of the presentation will be an independent one by the Beverly Caminariac Board relating to concerns to do with caribou and impacts on caribou harvesters. So we don't know exactly how long yet because we haven't got the information from the GMWT, but I would guess 30 to 40 minutes would be plenty.
For both presentations? We'll put you down right now for 40. Mm-hmm.
And I can say you'll need to confirm that, but since I don't think the GMWT is on the line. So,
no.
We were told that they're also going to give a presentation on the Huon management plan.
Yeah, that is one. Pardon me?
They said the same thing.
Okay, so GNWT. Yeah, unfortunately, all the people in GNWT were traveling today. They were supposed to be trying to dial in. Maybe
they had the same problem.
They may not have figured out the number. I shouldn't say that. No. So we'll put that down though. And then that takes us to Environment Canada. Lorraine is here from Environment Canada.
We will be attending, but at this point in time, we're not anticipating to give a presentation.
All right. So is there anyone I've missed here that is going around the table? I think that covers everybody. Okay. We could take a short break, or, I'm sorry?
One more question, though.
I was just wondering, is the Fisheries and Oceans a party to this EA, or what's their...
No, Fisheries and Oceans has pretty much completely ignored that process so far.
Yeah, there have been no concerns raised on fishery in the area, so...
I have a question, and that's mostly, I guess, aimed at Monica. Do you think... when we organize the hearing, we're going to have, obviously, you know, times for presentations, and then there will be times for anybody from the public to make statements. And should we have a separate Canada session, which we have had in the past, and in some places that has worked out quite well? Do you think that would be something we should do?
This is, I'm going to, at this point, I'm going to strongly recommend that you guys plan for a two-day hearing. I think just what we've heard this morning, the time requirements of just the registered interveners, and if you weren't planning on starting till 10, and then we usually have an hour break for lunch, you know, I think, and we have to leave time for the opportunity for members of the public to comment, and I am anticipating a lot of people who are going to want to speak. I think, and to, you know, I sort of expect everyone, especially the elders, to sit there all day and then sort of have an hour slot at 9 or 10 o'clock at night where they're, you know, that's their opportunity to speak. I don't
think... put them early on, but...
We would, like I said, make accommodation to try and not have elders go too late into an evening because we realize they get quite tired.
I think, and I mean, it's not just elders as well. There's a lot of other people and youth, I think, that are going to want to speak. You set aside a good chunk of time for that, and that was one of the main reasons that this hearing is being held here.
That's
is
good
to
point.
Give people the opportunity, the chance to speak as possible. I would consider that or anticipate that it's going to go into 2 days, and I think we should start planning for that right now. If not having everyone stay here overnight, then, you know, plan on chartering back and forth every day.
We really appreciate your input there. What we'll be doing is figuring out, looking at our time now based on what we've heard here at the table and what you've just told us. I wish I could say it's so simple, but there are a lot of things that other people have commitments to, and we've already sort of set this timing. And my preference, first and foremost, is to work within a day hearing, whether we go into the evening or not. But because we have, as you know, board members that come from across all over, and we do have some other commitments, it's not a simple thing for us to rejig some of the timetables, as well as people that are coming up from other places.
It'll certainly take us away and look at the options we have.
And there's a comment here from Rick.
Rick Kerr, Rolder Associates. I was just wondering if we could start earlier in the day.
That is a possibility.
Mary, this again. This is just speaking from experience at these hearings, in particular the Dry Bones Bay hearings, which I think are, you know, some very similar issues here. Certain areas, people, and, you know, small exploration programs, but that doesn't diminish the importance of them in people's minds. And, I mean, we sat at those hearings, I mean, although there was more than one company, you know, I mean, to ask people to sit there from 9 in the morning till 10 o'clock, I realize people have to travel and people are coming from elsewhere, but, you know, if you're definitely going to need an evening session till 9 or 10 at night, so people are going to be chartering back to Yellowknife 8 that evening. I don't see that it's a big imposition to have people, you know, we can end a little bit earlier in the evening, have people stay overnight, and then maybe have a half-day session the next morning. I don't think that that's too much to ask for people's schedules.
I'm not committing one way or another right now, Monica, but I certainly take your comments to heart, and we will definitely look at this, okay?
Well, Denny Nikwe also feels strongly about that recommendation made by Monica just now. Thank you.
We support that as well from Fort Rose Métis.
Okay, well, no, I appreciate this, and we can certainly take this to the board.
You got to take into consideration, you know, the consultation, like you say, INAC's responsible for that, so we're going to be doing some homework, too, for when we get to the meeting. And we're going to have things to say. There's going to be a lot of reports given here. There's going to be questions. You got to be able to answer those questions, too. You can't just give a report and expect to go home. You know, so 2 days makes a lot of sense to have 2 days, not something that's going to be rushed in. Especially when you're dealing with a caribou.
And water.
This is Ray from WWF. In past experience with elders in particular, they're not necessarily brief in their presentations, and they will very much resent being cut off, particularly when it's to do with critical issues on their land. That I think in respect for the elders in particular of the community, I agree that it needs to be a two-day meeting.
Okay, and certainly, Ray, the board is very familiar with dealing with elders, and we're not ignoring that fact. So all I'll say is we'll take all this into consideration, and we'll get back to you about all timing on that. But I cannot at this point commit to a two-day hearing because of it is a board decision. Okay. I think we're going to take a short 10-minute break, let people stretch their legs, go to the washroom, get a drink. On the phone, you can just stay connected or dial back in. You've got the correct numbers now. I'll leave that option up to you. Hello?
Hello?
Did you hear that we're taking a short break here?
You want us to hang up and call back, or just leave it on the line?
As madam.
You can leave it on the line or phone back. Your choice. 10 minutes. Hello?
Rosie Bjornson, Deniniquet, IMA.
Okay.
We'll
leave it on.
Has left the conference.
I'll just stop the recording now. Okay.
Just who do we have back online? Just to check to see if we have everyone back with us, please.
Ray Griffith with WWF is here.
Monica,
Or from Baker Lake.
Baker Lake.
NSMA is still on.
Cheryl. Do we have Fort Resolution Métis? Any new quay? Monica? Steven?
Rosie Bjornson, BKFN, IMA.
Okay, Rosie, welcome back.
Has joined the conference.
We're just waiting
for... Monica and Steve.
Monica.
Has joined the conference.
Monica and Steve. And do we have Fort Res Métis with us yet? No, eh? Okay, we have everybody back with us except for the Fort Res Métis. We didn't hear them join last time, so I think we're going to continue right now because I know people have got full days, and I'm sure they'll be joining us. We'll check on that. So Martin is just going to give us next steps and where we're at. We're just talking again. Monica, we've done a real quick calculation of presentations coming close to around 6 hours, so there is a very strong argument for extending the hearing, as you've mentioned. So, again, we can put a very strong case forward to the board, and that will then reflect how we can draft our agenda.
Mary, excuse me, it's Rosie again. Maybe you could mention the fact that when we had those scoping sessions here in Deniniquet for Tamerlane, the developer was unable to finish his presentation because of the amount of questions from the community. So if we're looking at a town of Fusakan of size of about, let's say, about 400 people, and maybe a good percentage of them coming out to speak their voice, this is going to be the main event in the community. So I feel that there will be a really strong need for a two-day hearing.
Yeah, and we appreciate all the feedback you guys have given on that. I think that you've given us a very strong message that we'll take to the board.
Thank you.
All right, and we're going to carry on now.
Yeah, so we'll be working on the logistics of the thing and go to our board here rather soon on how to go about this. Now, our next item on the agenda is, and that's why I call it a tentative agenda, because I had a hunch that it might change, is draft hearing agenda, and obviously not knowing what the length of the hearing is going to be at this point, it's going to be difficult to come up with a real agenda. but I think we've already heard a number of things that we need to consider when we draft one up. And A is we've got those presentations. We need to make sufficient time for public and probably having a specific elders time fairly early on so that they can make their voices known, and then if they don't want to sit through everything, they can possibly leave. In terms of the order of presentations, I would, our normal way of doing this is that is by the order of developer first, because that's you know, the stage, and then it's by the order in which we receive the request for party status. So who became a party first kind of goes first, and then everybody else. That's also normally the order in which we allow the questions afterwards. Being a community hearing, I would suspect that that would probably be the case again, and then there would also be some time for you know, questions from the public. I'm not sure how we're going to organize that, because in a sense, in the hearing, I would like to avoid a situation where we have one presentation dragging on for 3 hours because there's so many questions about it. In the end, we still have to realize that the purpose of the hearing is for the new board to get a lot of the information, and not necessarily for the developers to do all their public you know, consultation, or for the buyer to do all their public consultation at that hearing. So,
sorry, I have a question.
Sure.
The presentations, are they going to be presented to the board prior to being given, and are they going to be put on the website prior to being presented?
We'll be talking about that.
The next item on the upcoming deadline?
Upcoming deadline.
It's a very good question.
Yeah, but we will deal with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So in terms of the agenda, the way the hearing is going to run basically is there will be an opening statement, obviously, from our chair. There will be a presentation by the developer. And then the presentations will be in the order of how people or how organizations became a party. But we will make some time quite early on, I think, certainly for the elders to speak. And we probably will, I would at this point suspect that we'll break it down into, you know, a couple of presentations and then maybe, you know, open time for some time and then a couple of presentations again, rather than making everybody sit through 6 hours presentations and then they can start talking. Because then it's just, I don't think that's going to be really fair. And that way also it's a possibility that parties that have somebody come in to make a presentation who may not be available for 2 days, if we have a 2-day hearing, they know that they're on the second day or they know they're on the first day, then they can plan around that. We will, as I said, we will have translation services, we will have transcription, we will have a computer and a projector and a screen available, and there will be microphones. In terms of presentations from the public, we have learned that making people stand up in front of the car isn't going to work, so we will have cordless mics and we just, you know, move them around so people can speak in an environment that's somewhat comfortable for them. If anybody has any requirements on the technology, anything that goes beyond a computer, a laptop, and a projector, please let me know. We usually do ask that presentations, if there is a PowerPoint presentation or any kind of written material, to submit them to us sometime before. And I think usually we would like to have to say a week before. At least a draft version of it. If there are some minor changes, I don't think it's a big deal.
Maybe the 9th, Mark? This is Richard Walter Associates. Do you like to see the presentations on the 9th of January?
What day is that?
That's 1 week before the 16th.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
One thing I'd like to add there, Martin, probably to cover it, is if you are making a presentation and when you come to the hearing, please make sure you bring copies for the translator. It's very important that you know, we'll try and get information to them ahead of time, but they need preparation. If you are presenting, it's good for them to have the slides to go along. If you're reading from a paper, it's good for them to have that to review for terminology and words. It's very important to them. Okay?
How many people are we allowed to bring to this meeting?
Can you repeat that question?
How many people?
How many people do we expect?
No, how many people can he bring to the meeting?
What if we have Arthur Beckling, but
it's a public meeting. I mean, I would say how many you can afford to bring.
Is this out of our pockets?
Now, I'm not sure. I mean, there is certainly a limit to what the hall can legally hold. And the fire marshal, I'm sure, has set an upper limit on how many people can be in the hall. And to be honest, I haven't thought about that yet, because we haven't really come up against that problem in the past, that, you know, the hall would be too packed or so. But it's a public hearing, so anybody who wants to come to this hearing can come.
The Mackenzie Valley is not, they're not paying for our members to go to these meetings?
No, Gary, there is no participant funding for environmental assessments in the Mackenzie Valley Thirst Management Act. There are funding programs available through the Interim Resources Management Assistance Program that INAC runs, and I'm sure that if you need more information on that, you can talk to someone from Indian and Northern Affairs, but we do not have any financial assistance to assist people.
I should also mention that at this point, we are hoping to be able to provide a service whereby we are broadcasting the hearing over via our website. We are working on that. We haven't used that in the past, and we're not 100% sure yet it's going to work from the community. It depends on the speed of the
process. We're looking at trying to do web broadcasting for the hearing, but again, we're not sure if we can do
that. Yeah, so if it works, it would mean that people in other communities can at least listen in to the hearing, even though they may not be able to be there in physically. But I'm not making any promise at that time. That's something, the JRP has been able to do it, so I would think that we should be able to do it. So that's in terms of the hearing mechanics, I guess. Everything else in terms of, as I said earlier, I said there's going to be food. Now, if it's going to be a two-day hearing, we need to look at things like, are we going to go in and out? Are we going to stay there? How many meals can we cater? I mean, we do have a limited budget as well. So we need to look at all these things, and I would say at this point, can't really tell you much about it, and I'll have to get looking on this really quick and I guess get back to all the parties within the next few days, certainly before Christmas. And it was that. In terms of upcoming deadlines, I guess at this point, what's important is yes, at the 9th of January, we would like to have the presentations. We can make them available to the parties so we can brief our board and kind of what to expect. What we don't need necessarily all your speaking notes, but if you have slides and stuff like that, so that would be nice if you could submit that.
Martin, yes? You'll be providing a copy of the PowerPoints or the presentations to the translators yourself, or is that our responsibility?
I think we will do that. I think we'll probably give it to them like a day before or two, because it looks like now that there's quite a few of them.
Do you already have translators in mind? Or
yes, we actually already have them contracted.
They are, right?
Yeah, we've got them. Because now we have to let them know that it's going to be a two-day thing, but we've already, I think, have a kind of deal with them.
Yeah.
So that's right now the only upcoming deadline really I can and think of.
Any outstanding IRs?
Yes, there are actually quite a few outstanding IRs. We have received a round of applause for Environment Canada for hunting an IR that wasn't actually aimed at them and even doing it before the deadline. And also, the TNWT yesterday dropped off a fairly lengthy response to the information request. I haven't looked at it yet. It'll be up on the website this afternoon. Other than that, we haven't received any of the other responses yet, but I'm hoping to be getting them sometime this week.
Hey, Martin, it's Steve Ells here. Can I butt in for a second?
Sure. Minute if you need.
Just a couple of things that came to mind. I was just thinking about the presentations, and I heard that IMAC was considering not doing any presentations. And I was just thinking if there would be any value to them doing a presentation at all. Now, I suspect at this meeting that this is the first modern uranium hearing that your board is going to be dealing with. And I can guarantee that, and this is a public hearing, community hearing, that there's going to be all kinds of misconceptions about uranium. There's going to be discussions about radioactivity that people are going to be fearful of. There's going to be discussions about nuclear arms, I can guarantee it. And there's going to be all sorts of discussions about that, and Kim Jong-il and North Korea and so on and so forth. I've had these discussions. This stuff is going to come up. I think it would be extremely useful if INAC could come in and talk a little bit about the Nuclear Safety Commission, about the federal guidelines and policies and rules for the mining and exploration of uranium, as well as the selling and trade in uranium. And I think that would do a lot to deflect some of the questions that will come from the public later on. But I think I don't think that's going to be in the proponent's presentation. That's not their responsibility. But I think that would be an extremely useful information piece for everybody present to get an understanding of what's actually at play here and what the controls are.
Steve, just a question for you. I mean, again, we're looking at timing here, because something like that could be I really agree with you on the value on that, but putting that with a hearing really clouds what we're doing, which is assessing this project. If INAC, and I'm not committing INAC to anything, but if they could get in there the week before the hearing to do some kind of an information session, I have no idea if that's possible, would community people come out to something like that because it's not a hearing?
That's a good question. I mean, that hearing is the best form to do it because you're going to hit the most people and it's going to be fresh in people's minds, right? I understand it's a little beyond the scope, but I also am wary of the fact that there was all kinds of misinformation and misconceptions about what's actually going on. Once you mention uranium, everybody's back gets up and everybody has all sorts of things. They've seen too many movies. So I caution the board that you're going to be dealing with all kinds of crazy questions.
Okay. We've got a few comments here, a few that want to say something. And like Gary Potts with the Minerals Division from INAC, go. And then we have Leslie and Lorraine as well. Okay. All right. So, Gary?
Hi, Steve. It's Gary Potts here. And just a few weeks ago, we took a couple of community members from Lipsol K and Fourth Resolution down to uranium mine in Saskatchewan. And I think the presentations that were given there really opened up the eyes of the community members that were on the trip. And that got me thinking that there's a lot of misunderstanding about what uranium is used for these days. And the legacy of uranium in the Northwest Territories is not that great either. And that's what a lot of people are basing their understanding on. So what we were considering doing is having a uranium presentation or information session at some point in the community of Lipsol Cave. I'm not sure what the timing would be on this, but we're definitely thinking of doing something like that.
Excuse me, Gary. So how would you accommodate the Nanuqua First Nations to attend that information session?
We would consider that as well, going to Fourth Resolution. I understand that our minerals people gave a presentation last week on mineral exploration. We can probably do something along the same lines in Fort Res, but related to uranium.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Fort Resolution, maybe, was not part of that, I take it, eh?
Oh.
I'm not sure.
Can we be involved? Do we want to be involved?
Yes.
How about the site visit? Did anybody take, did they accommodate Keith in that? Baron?
Gary, this particular development is an exploration development. There's not really a site visit usually associated with a small exploration development.
I can answer that for you, Gary. It's Rosie from Denny Clough First Nations. The way that we were told about that uranium mine visit wasn't through Indian and Northern Affairs until after Cease had contacted me and I made some noise up at the IMA level, the regional level, and then Steve and Dora had got on to that. So Cease was the one that contacted me. There wasn't anybody else.
No, but I understand there was a site visit made and Fort Resolution was sent some elders from Denny Nuclear, Uranium City, and Fort Res Métis wasn't involved. I understand that we weren't welcome on the plane.
Well, Gary, it's Gary Fox here. That's something that we could talk about offline. If you can give me do you have a pen and paper? I can give you my phone number and you can call me, or I can call you.
Sure, give me your number.
867-669-2519.
Gary Potts?
Yes.
Okay,
and
does that office stand for the
North Shore business as well? Did you get my phone number? You can call me as well.
I wrote down your phone number. We'd very much like some type of site visit and information about uranium because there is a lot of community concerns. I mean, they're saying that there's people still dying from Great Bear Lake.
Okay, this is Cheryl, right?
Yes.
You can call me at 669-2519 as well.
Pardon me?
Call me at 669-2519.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I will.
Thank you, Gary. Okay, so we've just... Thank you, Steve, for bringing that up. That's, again, another thing for consideration. We can have more dialogue with on the fly with INET. Leslie, before we move on, you had one other comment. And Steve, you had another point you wanted
to... Mary, it's Steve here. I had one more point that I wanted to make.
Before we get to that, I just wanted to let Leslie, she had her hand up earlier. Did you have a comment? Yeah, Leslie Wickens.
I just wanted to say that based on experience with this issue with the BQ Caribou Management Board, that any information provided on uranium should include the whole timeline from beginning to exploration to waste management and storage. And I know that isn't part of this project or the CA necessarily, but those are the questions you will get. And that is the basis of a lot of the misunderstanding that will be the basis of the questions if people don't have that information.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Steve, you had one more comment?
Yeah, just before we moved on to the deadline stuff, is there any value in, I think Martin said that the order of the presentations would be the order of people declaring themselves as parties, but I think there's probably some value in not following that model and ordering the presentations based on what they're going to be presenting. For example, I think it'd be useful to hear about the BQ presentation on and the GMLP presentations on caribou migrations through that area before we hear from the First Nations about how the effects on caribou might impact upon traditional land use activities.
That's a very good point, Stephen. We can discuss Excellent. That a bit more. We're going to, our next topic is going to be asking people to identify some of the main issues you plan on discussing at the hearing. Again, let's put things out on the table. What are you planning to bring forward to the board? And again, I encourage, if there's a potential dialogue that can happen before the hearing, we certainly encourage that. So I'd like to move now, if that's okay with everybody, we've gone through some of our upcoming deadlines. You're all aware that you have IRs to respond to, and I know you're all working on those, and we're taking up your time by being here. So our next thing is that we'd like to go around the table. Again, I'm going to start at the phone, and if you could briefly identify the issues that you would like to speak to at the hearing. I know you haven't got all your presentations nailed down right now, but you do have an idea of where you're going. So we'll start with, again, Ray with World Wildlife Fund, please.
Okay, I think the presentation that we were looking at was primarily going to be focusing on cumulative effects and the, in fact, it would be the, you know, sort of a demonstration of the fact that there could be significant cumulative effects following this particular proposal, in maybe not directly related, but in the same area. So, and also the cumulative effects in relation to how the process of planning and the process should be taking place.
Okay, thank you. Just writing down here. Mm-hmm. Oh, we are taping. Okay, moving along to looks okay, Monica.
Our focus will be a little bit of everything, but primarily on past, present, and future land use in that area, the importance of that area on a cultural and spiritual level, the impact if the caribou populations are negatively impacted, what will the impacts of that be on traditional land use and harvesting. I also have a lot of technical issues, questions to the developer, just in relation to their proposed program. Also a big focus on the lack of information that's out there to be able to do a proper assessment of this.
Okay, might I also suggest, if possible, between now and the hearing, Monica and UR Energy, you might want to have a bit of dialogue. Perhaps you can discuss some of your technical issues that you have, Monica, directly with the developer. Again, we do encourage dialogue to try and resolve your issues, okay? Just to put that out there. Anything else you want to add, Monica?
I was just going to say, well, I mean, a lot of the issues I did bring up in our information request, so I'm going to be interested to see your energy's response to those. I mean, we always like to have dialogue and try to deal with these issues prior to the hearing, but I think there's some pretty fundamental differences of opinion here, primarily that this community is strongly, strongly opposed to this development going ahead, so I don't know how much of that we can resolve before the hearing.
Okay. All right, well, no, I appreciate that. Okay, Steve Allison, the IMA office?
Yeah, I know you're sick of hearing from me on this, but site-based consultation stuff. I am in dialogue constantly with INOC on this issue, but I don't expect there's going to be full resolution of this issue by the hearing, so I'm just going to bring that up as some just sort of information for the board to consider. So I'll be mentioning some of that, and I think the bulk of the discussion that I'll be bringing forward is has to do with a lack of information, much as Monica mentioned. I think from certainly my office's perspective and Acacia's perspective that the amount of information that we can access and actually consider is not enough to make an informed decision in that area. So we'll be bringing that issue up.
Cheryl Gree from the North Slave Media Alliance.
Yeah, we don't have a presentation yet either. Of course, we'll be addressing the issue of land and resource rights and the effects of resource depletion.
Cheryl, I'm sorry, can you speak up? You're very faint here.
Does that help?
Yeah.
We'll be addressing the issue of land and resource rights,
mm-hmm.
and the issue of depletion of resources prior to the resolution of claims, the issues of you know, whose royalties they might be and whose resources they might be. We'll be addressing issues of socioeconomic and cultural impact. Equity will be a big issue. And then, of course, safety and health of the land and the animals in the water and the people and our future land use options, especially considering the fact that we haven't been involved in any land use planning for this area yet. And unfortunately, when land use planning hasn't been done, we have to hash it out on an ad hoc basis for each development as it comes up, which is really unfortunate for the developer, but we cannot remain silent. So that most of the presentation should fit within this case.
Okay, Cheryl. I thank you for the note of that. I'd like to again remind you, though, that we are assessing an exploration program. We are not forecasting what can happen as far as any future mine development. So when it comes to royalties and sharing of that, please really consider your presentation as a relevancy for the proposed development we have in front of us, okay? Because they are not extracting any resources with this program, okay?
Yeah, but they have already staked claims, and they now already have a legal right that infringes our rights.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that, that's all. Okay, Gary,
starts to quit separating those two because they both go together. Exploration is going to lead to development. You know, you should at least start making those connections early.
Okay, well, we won't get into that dialogue right now, but thanks for your comments, Gary. Gary, do you have any indication of topic areas the NWG, Métis, or the Fort Res Métis would like to bring forward?
Well, I'm sure Arthur will be doing some speaking. He's not a quiet man, so. But I'll get back to you on the nation because
okay.
I've been in contact with her, actually.
All right, and
he'll be talking about the caribou and the effects of the caribou for sure.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And not to forget, we have Rosie.
Hi. yeah, Deninikwa First Nations will be making a PowerPoint presentation, possibly. It's not in stone right now, but we'll be talking in past, present, future land use, the importance of this area and all Acadial area for the Acadial Dene First Nations, and cumulative effects and impacts of uranium exploration in this area. Land use application reviews, the concerns that we have with this application, there's quite a bit of stuff that needs to be discussed. I don't know about dialogue prior to the hearing, but I want to make sure that the board hears our concerns in regards to this application. And I don't know if sovereignty is a big issue, but because we're talking of uranium, it may be an issue. As well as lack of data for scientific matters with caribou water. He said DFO doesn't have any comments or any commitments made to this hearing because they don't believe there's any impacts done to the fish. Well, I think that's a big concern. Water and caribou is another big concern for Deninikwa First Nations. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosie. And moving along to Oren from Baker Lake.
Yeah, we'll speak to the integrity of the Upper Thelon Watershed and the Thelon Wildlife Sanctuary, the effect of exploration on that. Also, sustainable continuity of the Beverly and Cavenier caribou herds and the impact on Baker Lake. Also, Barrenlands grizzly depredation and species at risk. And Baker Lake's 30-year experience with uranium exploration going back to the 70s.
Okay, that's, I think I've covered everybody on the phone. Have I missed anybody there? No, okay. I'm going to now just open up things around the table here. First, I guess I'd like to ask UR Energy. You've heard quite a few comments here. Was there any specific thing in your presentation that you wanted to address up front or that you want to share with the group here other than a review of your project? Rick?
For older associates, what we will be presenting in our talk is a summary again of the project just to refresh everybody's mind as to exactly what we're proposing, what the timelines are, and then we'll discuss what the any mitigation that we have to potential impact, any mitigation measures that we'll be putting forward in order to minimize or eliminate environmental impact. I realize that people have a lot of questions, so we're going to purposely keep our talk pretty short because we're anticipating that there will be a number of questions and we don't want to be talking for too long, so we end, like I said, anticipate around 20 minutes.
Okay.
For
that. Thank you very much. And moving right around, INAC has already said currently you're not sure whether you will be making any presentation, but I think you'll take to heart some of the comments here and let us know if you change your mind, right?
Yep. That's correct.
Okay.
I just can address that with INAC. They're not planning on making a presentation. You know, I think they should make a presentation, considering they're the ones taking care of consultation. There's going to be a lot of questions for how the consultation is taking place for Section 35 rights. It's a question on sovereignty of the land. I think they should be given a report to how they plan to deal with everybody around this area.
Definitely, Gary, I appreciate that comment. Whether they actually make a presentation or whether the board holds that question to INAC, I think that will come out during the hearing. So they've heard your concerns about that comment and are aware of that.
I just noticed that they've come to Ford Resolution before and they tried to do that, just sit down on the side and be observers and sit down and not take part of it. I mean, they should be a big part of this. They're the ones that are approving this stuff along with the McKenzie Valley.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for your comment, Gary. Leslie, I think you've already given us a bit of a heads up, but perhaps you want to go into a bit more detail?
Sure. As I said before, the BQ B&B's presentation will focus in the first part on identifying things we know and things we don't know about the caribou herds that use the area, basically, and trying to bring together all the information we have. And in that, it will try to resolve some of the question marks in the graphic that Martin has provided. And the second, and this will be based both on government survey data collected in the past that the board has compiled in maps and recent caribou information based on the satellite calling programs. And then the second part of the presentation will focus on other issues of concern to the Beverly County Air Act Board based on its experience with uranium mining in northern Saskatchewan and other related issues, basically to do with both caribou and the harvesting of caribou.
Okay. Thank you very much. And then that moves us along to Environment Canada, who said that they did not have a presentation at the hearing, but they will be there. Have I missed anybody? Is there anybody that wishes to add anything else before I turn it back over to Martin?
Yeah, Mary?
Yeah.
I have a concern that I'm been concerned with since I started reviewing this application in regards to Saskatchewan guidelines for mineral exploration. I want to know why the McKenzie Valley Environmental Impact Review Board and Land and Water Board are considering exploration in the Northwest Territories for uranium using guidelines that do not speak to our own areas up here in the north. Like we have this is barren land country, not Saskatchewan. I don't know if there's a lot of trees or whatever in that area, but don't you think that
the Land and Water Board and the Environmental Impact Review Board should be have their own guidelines in place before considering any exploration at all.
Yeah, I'm going to let Martin speak to that one, Rosie.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't think the either the Impact Review Board or the Land and Water Board is how would I say, expert enough or knowledgeable enough to be able to create such guidelines. What we have done, though, is in one of the information requests that is going to the developer, we are asking the developer to describe how and why those Saskatchewan guidelines actually are, you know, relevant and how they, you know, if they're applicable to the proposed development and why they think that that is. So in that sense, I think we'll hope to get an answer pretty soon to the question as to what extent, you know, are those guidelines applicable.
The board hasn't adopted and said we're using guidelines from a province. I know the developer has made reference to guidelines, and we've just asked the developer to clarify why and how those guidelines can be relevant in the north.
But for us to come up with our own set of guidelines, I don't think that we would have the expertise and knowledge to do that.
But we have the expertise and knowledge to approve these applications.
This is Rick Schreier, Golder Associates. As Martin mentioned, there are no guidelines for uranium exploration in the NWT. So in lieu of that, the best available guidelines in order for mineral exploration are the ones for Saskatchewan. And we're dealing specifically, these guidelines deal with how to deal with, you know, how to do drilling, how to deal with drill waste and so forth. And so, and there's, you know, this comes from a long history of uranium exploration in Saskatchewan that goes back, what, 35 years? So these guidelines have had a long history in terms of their development, and they're simply the best guidelines that we have available in order for us to use in this program.
Those guidelines are just templates and can be changed, though, I take it, eh?
I'm sorry, say that again?
It's just guidelines, it's just a template, right?
Well, the best practices in terms of drilling and how to deal with doing uranium exploration.
They have no policies here in the north ourselves. You learn every day. Things change. You're using some other province.
You're all right. Those are guidelines, and there will eventually be, if the project goes ahead, a land use permit that has conditions to it, and it's quite possible that some of those conditions will be in response to what comes out of this environmental assessment. And it may well be that the condition says that, you know, guideline number so and so has to be followed. And I can tell you from experience in the oil and gas industry and having worked for Land and Water Board before, that quite often the Land and Water Board will look into, you know, what are the best available practices. And in the oil and gas industry, Alberta obviously is sort of the logical choice. And a lot of the Alberta Energy and Utilities Board guidelines are being referenced and being used because they have spent the time, money, effort and whatnot in developing these guidelines in response to, you know, having hacked a lot of development and then realizing new guidelines. For us to sort of come up with a special set of guidelines for the most territories when we haven't had much recent experience in an area is very difficult. So if there is a document that can be used, we can certainly be, you know, looking at that. It doesn't mean that just because something is in the Saskatchewan guidelines and as in the process of this assessment, you know, we come up with something, a better way of doing things or maybe a more stringent way of doing things, that doesn't mean that at the outcome the land use permit might not have, you know, more stringent conditions in it than the guidelines.
You mentioned Alberta has money and expertise for guidelines to prepare their guidelines. Well, I wouldn't rely on Alberta's guidelines because right now they're just destroying the last area of the ecosystem for the boreal region. It's a tar sand, so that's another issue.
Good point.
Okay.
What I'm trying to say here is that these guidelines is one document that will be considered, that one will also consider the submissions that you people make at the hearing. So at the end, the board will write have a report, and it's quite possible that that report will put, you know, more limits on the project than those Saskatchewan guidelines would do
yeah.
in some area. It really depends on what the outcome of this interesting news.
Anyways, thanks for your comment, Rosie. I know that there's more information as a result of an IR request that we'll be receiving, and you'll be able to look at that point. So does anybody else have any comments or questions on anything raised right now?
Yes, I do, actually. Steve, you had the idea of maybe not having such a, you know, bureaucratic approach to ordering the presentation. And if I look at what we have here now, we have obviously the developer, I think, should go first because they're going to explain what the development is about. And then we have the Caribou Management Board, and together with the Government of Northwest Territories, who would give us a lot of information on, you know, what do we know and what we don't we know about the Caribou and the Filon Game Sanctuary Management Plan. So, and then we would have a number of information and Métis presentations after that. So what I would suggest is that, okay, with the group here, we start with the developer, then have the management board and the GNWT present, and then take all the other ones, and within those, we order them.
And might I just add in there, I like that idea from Martin, and if INAC does decide that they wish to make any short opening comments to deal with or just to address consultation, which is going to come out throughout the hearing, and or just mention something about uranium briefly, because we cannot have a workshop on uranium development at this point, it may be also appropriate that that is done at the upfront part versus later. I just put that out there, and we'll be talking more to people as we firm up the agenda.
This is Ray with WWF. I would request that WWF follow the BQ board's presentation, because it's linked with some of the Caribou issues.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, Ray.
I just want to go back to the consultation one with INAC for a minute. The reason we're having troubles with that is there's confusion on who the person is going to come and consult. Is it INAC? Is it their duty to consult? Or is it the developer's duty to consult? And you know, with consultation along comes accommodation. You know, we've got two companies, well, INAC and the developer, and they're both dodging the bullet on who should pay for these consultation meetings. So I would like them to be able to clarify that when they, at the meeting. And Lutz,
okay? Okay, thanks, Gary. I know INAC made note of your concerns, and hopefully someone can get back to your organization directly on that. Any other comments?
Yeah, Steve Ellis here. It'd be preferable for the Treaty and Tribal Corporation to go near the end, in the order. And there's also presentations from the tourism operators out there that we need to consider.
Those I would, because they are not actually parties to the assessment, I would think that those will be sort of at the beginning of the public session. And Monica, as this hearing is being held in Lutz, okay, and it is a NIMH hearing, but it's going to be on your turf. Do you have any preference in where Lutz, okay, wants to be in this?
Yeah, I'd like a whole day just for myself.
In terms of order, do you want to go first or you go last? Or?
A few of us were emailing some draft orders around yesterday, and I think it makes sense to obviously have the developer first. Then we were, as we were saying, the BQ board, GNWT, World Wildlife Fund, some of these overarching issues. And then we get into the Aboriginal groups. At that point, I would prefer that Tsutsulke go first, as we are the closest community.
And you're also the first to sign up as a party in that sense. We would have got me there. Okay.
And then, you know, perhaps following us, either, I'm not sure if Travel Corporation would go last or if we'd have the tourism operators in there before that. But, you know, maybe those two near the end just to sort of round things out. Again, Tom Foss is a registered intervener.
Right.
So don't want anybody to forget that. They're not sort of out of the blue here.
What we'll be doing then is I will send out sort of a draft, auto or draft agenda here really soon. And then if anybody has an issue where they are in the auto, they can let me know. But I'll take that all into consideration.
Yeah, well, we'll do that once we have a discussion on our timing and days. And that'll be out by the end of this week. Is there any other comments from the phone or from here? Okay, well, Martin, have we missed anything that you can think of?
I'm pretty sure we have, but since there will have to be some sort of an exchange in terms of, you know, dates, if we have to go, if we can go for 2 days, those things can then be, addressed. There was nothing that I had in mind, like all the things that I have listed that I need to get out of here, I pretty much have gotten, except the draft hearing agenda.
Martin, one point before you move on, it's Rich Rarick, Older Associates. If we're talking about 2 days and the board has a problem with the 17th, is the 15th a possibility in terms of having a 2-day hearing? 15th or 16th?
Yeah,
we'll definitely be looking at all options.
I just know there's certain members, the reason I say this is certain members of our board are traveling, they have some commitments, and we have quorum issues if we can't have them all together. That's my only big concern.
I have a question for Rick, for UR Energy,
yep.
Or maybe Golder Associates. Will you guys be providing a charter or some kind of gavel to this hearing for Aboriginals?
My understanding was that was the board's responsibility in order to provide transport to the hearing. Am I incorrect in that statement, Martin?
You are incorrect in that statement.
Okay.
It is always an issue for us, a difficult decision to where do we where do we locate a hearing, because there is usually more than one community involved. In a really big process like the Gotcha, where we've, you know, gone around basically, I both decided that is not warranted on this one. And we don't have the budget to go around on every project. We do not have a participant funding program at this point, and we have the difficulty that if we provide one party with funding, that can be interpreted, or at least it's being interpreted by lawyers, that this creates an apprehension of bias that sort of kind of out in favor of that particular party, and we're helping them, but not the others.
Okay, Martin, my question wasn't directed at you, but it would be in good faith if they did consider accommodating the First Nations groups around the lake. Thank you.
Okay, Rosie, I think that your comments have been heard and taped.
Martin, has anybody requested to have a meet? Have you guys come to Board Resolution to do a scoping session?
There has been a request for a resolution to have a workshop on uranium, and we have passed that on to INAC.
Well, not a workshop. I'm talking about a open session like what you're asking for. A hearing.
We haven't actually received a request for a hearing there. The only request we have received is that for a workshop on uranium, which, as I said, we have passed on to INAC, and I think there was some back and forth going on there now. We haven't had a request for hearing, and I would...
But is that only for DKFN members?
That I wouldn't know.
I'd imagine that's the way it's going. But can we request we have a scoping session in Port Resolution?
We are beyond scoping on this process. You can put a request into the review board at any time that you want to have a hearing or whatnot. That's part of our process. It's called a request for ruling. You'd have to do that in writing, and then the board would make a decision on it.
Okay. Back to the Luther Care meeting. Can on the travel arrangements, you guys are paying for the travel arrangements. Can do we have to take the charter, or can we go by?
Well, Gary, we were just discussing this. There is no funding available for attending hearings, and the board does not have a budget, and we cannot bring in different parties because then we could be viewed with an apprehension of bias. If you wish to consider dialogue with INAC that has a program that assists communities in unsettled claim areas to participate in environmental processes, then certainly I would suggest that you follow up from that avenue. But we as a board do not have any funding. We have requested funding in our budget for this purpose that would be administered if we ever got it from an outside source. So right now, unfortunately, we do not have funding. Okay. Sorry about that. Taking the bear of bad news.
You guys got lots of decision making and no money to do it.
Yeah, well, we all...
Steve Ellis here, just with regards to my comments earlier about INAC doing some presentation or a small workshop on uranium. I understand the review board's position that they don't want that to be part of the hearing per se, but if INAC could come in earlier, that might be very useful.
Yeah, I think that Gary Potts is here from the Mineral Development Division, and he has heard that and taken notes, so I can't speak for what their capacity is and what they can and cannot do, but we heard that, and it is a good comment. Timing is pretty tight, though. So.
Steve, it's Gary here, and we will consider that.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. All right, well, unless anyone has anything else to say, I'd like to adjourn this meeting. Martin and I have a bit of a task to sort of tease this out. We'll get back to you as soon as we can about maybe any potential changes to the scheduled one-day hearing. As you realize, there's lots of logistics and things we have to look into first, but we're going to work on that right away.
Mary, just to give you a heads up, our office is closed as of Monday.
Yeah.
For the holidays, so...
No, we'll make every attempt to have something out to you by Friday.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, I really want to thank all of you for your participation and taking the time out to come to this. I think it's an important thing for us to sit around and have this dialogue and try to plan ahead. So... look forward to seeing everyone on the 16th. And if you have questions, please contact Martin. I love saying that, eh? Anyone have Martin's phone number? Right, Martin?
I don't.
Yeah.
So you're thinking January 16th and some other day?
Well, it would be either the 15th or 17th. We have to look at scheduling.
Is it absolutely necessary to be consecutive days?
It's not absolutely necessary, but I think that would be the preference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And certainly if there was any party that's only available, if you do go on a two-day hearing and you're only available for one of those days, you let us know and we'll make sure that you are scheduled for the day you are available, okay? All right, so I am going to officially end this meeting. Thank you, everybody. Bye on the phone.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Goodbye.
Has left the conference.
Rosie Bjornson, DKFN IMA.